The South Ferry local rocketed into the station at juggernaut speed, accompanied by a screeching of brakes at decibel levels louder than a jet engine. It sounded like metal filings, thick as orange peels, were being sliced off the rails. With a convulsive shudder, the train came to a complete stop, paused, and then the long line of doors opened serenely, in unison, as if denying the whole thing hadn't been completely out of control seconds before. I boarded and took a seat. The train got underway, but I hardly noticed. I was too preoccupied trying to plumb the depths of Monica's treacheries. As a consequence, I almost forgot to get off when my stop came. At the last moment, I sprang to my feet and shot out through the doors just as they were closing. As the train departed the station, I headed for the turnstile exit, which was not the usual waist-high type, but a vertical barred contraption that looked more like a piece of farm equipment, a thresher-harvester type of thing. It looked as if it were designed to shred people rather than permit them safe passage to the street. Pushing through without damage, I continued to the stairway exit and the arrow pointing up. Upon reaching the steps, however, I discovered that water from above was cascading down them like a terraced waterfall. As I climbed, I felt like a salmon fighting its way upstream. With wet ankles, I emerged above ground and quickly discovered the reason. A slush puddle the size of a mill pond covered the sidewalk and extended out into the intersection. Workers were trying to free a frozen drain. I executed several ballet leaps to get around the mess, and then, avoiding the sidewalk altogether, I kept to the street instead, walking up a deep tire rut laid down by the last passing vehicle. Still preoccupied with Monica, I failed to pay much attention to the disabled car double parked in front of me that had both its trunk and its engine hood raised. Suddenly, without warning, Joey K. came rushing at me from behind, knocking me off balance and shoving me forward. My instinctive reaction was to leap in the air, or try to, so I could at least throw my feet ahead of me to brace against his onslaught. But I never got a chance to brace against anything, with the exception of the trunk lid on which I slammed my forehead. Luckily, I hadn't yet removed my stocking cap. Joey slammed the lid without the slightest regard for not chopping my fingers. I called out for help. I shouted it. I yelled it. Following the closing of the trunk, the next thing I heard him do was slam the engine hood, followed by his driver's side door opening and closing as he got behind the wheel. I kicked at the trunk latch and continued yelling for help. Joey cranked the ignition. The engine roared to life, and then, a split second later, the muffler beneath me joined in the chorus, quickly settling down to a throaty purr for only a second or two before Joey stepped on the gas. The tires responded by spinning and slipping, and the back end of the car fishtailed, getting underway. He must have driven us right by the police station. I had no idea if anyone had witnessed my abduction. I heard no one shouting for him to stop. I struggled to get onto my hands and knees, but fell over as he rounded the first corner. He had turned right, which meant we were now heading north, uptown. I could tell the street we were on was not getting the same amount of sunshine, because the clumps of the snow being thrown up into the wheel wells sounded less heavy and not so noisy. I shouted forward, loud enough to be heard. "Joey, the police already know. I already told them. Don't make it harder on yourself." He didn't answer. I was sure he could hear me, though. I kicked at the back of the rear seat. That made him mad. He shouted back, "Hey, cut it out back there. I'm warning you. I'm warning you." I started to cough and realized that exhaust was filling the trunk. I felt around for a wrench, a pry bar, a car jack, anything I could use to force the lid. Nothing. Joey made another turn, to the left this time, which meant we were now heading west again. The drumming of the snow clumps once again grew noisier, so thunderous, in fact, it was like being in a barrel under Niagara Falls. I shouted above the din, "Joey! Hey, how soon do we get there? Joey, I'm going to need some fresh air pretty soon." No answer. "Joey, I'm not kidding. Come on, I can't breathe back here." Still no answer. I tried using my stocking cap to plug a place that I thought the fumes might be getting in. It didn't seem to help much. I had to find some way to vent these gases or else open up a breathing hole that I could press my lips to and breathe that way. Whatever I did, I'd better do it quickly, because the foul air was thickening and I was starting to feel lightheaded. Climbing again onto my hands and knees, I tried to bow the trunk lid with my back. No luck. The space was too confining. I tried the same thing on my back, using my legs this time, but that was just as ineffective. I couldn't get enough leverage to exert enough force. I attempted to punch out a tail light, but couldn't. I tried kicking viciously at a corner of the trunk lid, with no apparent result except to further irritate Joey. He warned me of dire consequences if I didn't quit, as if my situation wasn't dire enough already. I lifted the collar of my shirt to try breathing through the material. What good that was going to do, I couldn't imagine, since there was no way to convince my red blood cells to take up the available oxygen instead of concentrating on the carbon monoxide. "Joey, come on, no kidding. I need some air back here. These fumes are killing me." "Come on, Joey, what's the point?" He wasn't answering. He didn't need to. The point was he was finishing the job he had started earlier. And the exquisite irony? That after narrowly surviving being drowned and strangled by him in the rowing room, I was now about to succumb, a few hours later, in the trunk of his old car.
"Hey, Joey, you know you're a good wrestler. Joey, you're a good wrestler, you know that? I saw you one all Ivy. Come on, come on, we're both lions. You're much better off just running. Come on, Joey, how about it?"
Again, no answer. The silence, except for the clumps of snow, was deafening.
"Joey, how much further? I'm really going to need some air back here."
I gave up trying to communicate. I felt too sick to pound on the trunk any longer. Coughing made me start to retch, even though my stomach was empty. I lay still, ceasing to move except to cough, and then ceasing to cough as well. After a while, I no longer heard the clumps of snow beating against the undercarriage.